Well, hey, the inaugural On The Ball podcast kicks off. This week, Champions League fallout. What's next for Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund? We discuss the summer transfer window, the big comings and goings across Europe. Man City and the Yankees buy into the MLS, David Beckham retires, and how can the MLS get bigger? All this and more, we're On The Ball. Welcome everybody to On The Ball podcast, the first podcast of a brand new series. I'm here with producer Gio and with two very special guests today. We have US soccer fanatic Brad Namdar. How are you doing today, Brad?
I'm doing good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's good to have you on the show. Kevin Camacho's here, Tottenham Hotspur fanatic in his own right. How are you doing, Kevin?
Doing well on yourself.
Doing good. Bit of late night last night, but these things happen, but good to be with you guys and talk about soccer. First port of call, Champions League final. What do you guys think, Kevin?
My first thought was, wasn't it nice not to see a ref swarmed by Spanish players? You know, the past few Champions Leagues, you've just seen Spain complain about, a Spanish team complain about every call. So it was kind of nice. But I enjoyed the German efficiency in their goalkeeping.
Wow, two great goalkeepers.
The goalkeeper kept Dortmund in the game. It was, especially without Götze, so.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, to be fair, I was so happy the Champions League wasn't two Spanish teams. I mean, how many Clásicos can you see in, like, one season? They play each other twice, Barcelona and Real Madrid, twice in the league, twice in, like, Copa del Rey, and, like, oh, I don't know. What do you think, Bran?
I think that if you looked at the technical and tactical side of the game, especially in the first half, Dortmund was phenomenal. They were going all out as far as just being aggressive and trying to stay in it. And I think they've lost a little bit of gas towards the end. And, I mean, Bayern Munich has been, you know, three out of the last four Champions League finals were in it. They never won it. And then Robin stepped up, got that goal. It was a – I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be dead honest with you. And I even put on my Facebook status. I said that, you know, Bayern Munich may, you know, have won the Champions League, but people will always remember how Dortmund played.
No, oh, yeah.
So, and I think Dortmund played really well and should have won the game.
It definitely was better than last year's snooze fest of a game where Chelsea just sent 10 guys in the box and tried to pass it to Drogba.
As Mourinho said, they came and parked the bus. It's true. I mean, it's going to be interesting next season, surely, with Guardiola coming in and taking over from Bayern. I don't know, quickly say something on a bit controversial about Pep Guardiola. In my view, he's a bit overrated. Mm-hmm. That's just my opinion. I mean, he took over Barcelona, the greatest team.
Yep.
They won the Champions League with Ronaldinho and Eto'o and these people. Took them over, and one of us could manage manage Barcelona to La Liga in a two-team league, and win the Champions League. And now he's taken over the best team in Europe again. I mean, does it really prove anything if he wins something with Bayern?
I don't think so. See, here's the thing, Pep Guardiola. He's a passionate coach, you know, he connects with the players, he's got a, you know, lucrative, amazing playing career. And here's the thing, when you go ahead and you take over a team, you know, that has Messi, that has that quality of a star, that has the level that Barcelona has, honestly, you don't need to do much but just maintain the talent, not develop the talent, not develop a style, but maintain the style, maintain the talent. So Pep Guardiola, you know, you're given the keys to the kingdom, you know, just don't drop the keys, that's all you have to do. So, and now he's going to Bayern.
And plus, at Barca, he was played there, as you said, great playing career. He's ingrained and indoctrinated into that actual style of play. So it came natural to him.
To be a good coach, he cannot get a Bayern or a Barca. You got to give him, you know, a lower level side, maybe a Tottenham Hotspur.
Hey, we're not a lower level side.
You know, to see what they can do, or you know, give him a Wigan Athletic. Let's see what he can do if he can get them up there. But not a Bayern or Barca. I mean, I can give an 8-year-old that job, and they'll be able to, you know.
I agree. Well, Dortmund are trouble next season, obviously. Go ahead, Kevin, sorry.
Before, do y'all notice that next season is going to be, if it goes through, the Europe Super Cup is going to be Chelsea and Bayern Munich, so Pep versus
Mourinho
again, so they never leave.
I know, it'd be a great game, if Mourinho does indeed, mm-hmm. So I'm sure that will happen. But, yeah, for next season, Dortmund losing their two best players, I mean, Mario Götze has already signed with Bayern, and now looks like Lewandowski is on his way to Bayern as well. So they lose that. It's remarkable. I think you're right, Brad. People won't. Both of you are right about. They won't forget how Dortmund did this season. Considering every season they lose pretty much their best player. Last season they lost Kagawa to Manchester United, who was their star midfield player, and this summer they're going to lose two of them, you know, unfortunately. But well, if we go into great segue into summer comings and goings, there's been a lot of activity, especially in European soccer. Manchester United, I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast would know, Sir Alex Ferguson retiring after 26 years, coming in November 1986, which, giving away my age, is older than me by almost, well, a year or so. Incredible. David Moyes coming in. What do you guys think about Wayne Rooney? Do you think he's on his way? Should he go?
I personally think he's gone. I don't think he should go, but I think he's gone. I think he already had his going out with Moyes at Everton.
Do you think he's Manchester United will miss him?
You know, I think so. But with Van Persie, though, I don't know. Van Persie's taken up a lot, and Rooney's just kind of sat in the back and just kind of been a pissy little mood. I mean, he's sat, and I guess, I mean, I can understand him being the big dog forever. And then, well, not forever, but as long as he was being the big dog, and then Van Persie coming in and becoming Ferguson's favorite early on.
Yeah.
I think that when you look at a club like Manchester United, you know, one of the biggest clubs on the planet, it's Wayne Rooney, to be honest with you, he's always done with hard work, he's scored goals, but he wasn't always the franchise player. He wasn't always the one with the crown and glory. Before that, Cristiano Ronaldo was there, and people were more into the whole Cristiano Ronaldo fad. And then after that, you know, you lose Cristiano Ronaldo, this might be, not Cristiano, or Wayne Rooney, you have an opportunity for Chicharito to step up also in situations. You have an opportunity for Van Persie. Van Persie, though, I would say physically, being healthy-wise, Wayne Rooney was healthy. He was a healthy player, and he was a physical player, and he was nitty-gritty in the box. And he would be, you know, he had maybe, I think, 2-3 injuries I could think of since his tenure at Man United.
Yeah.
So I think it's bad form for him to leave Man United because, you know, the coach leaves, but...
I think the irony of it is when he put in his first transfer request, what, I think 2010, his argument was, oh, well, because Manchester United aren't showing enough ambition to go out and sign a player. Look, they buy Van Persie, who's one of those players that he wanted them to buy, and now he's being overshadowed, and now he wants to leave.
So on a steal, too. Man U got Van Persie on a steal.
Oh, yeah. I mean, looking at, what, £23 million, which is probably about $31 million. I mean,
he pretty much got a goal of a million right there.
I think Brad made a good point about alluding to the injuries. I mean, Van Persie, I mean, his last season at Arsenal, he had a full season, but before then he was always injured. He couldn't play more than 20 games a season.
Right. He's wiry.
He's wiry. Mm-hmm. He's fragile. But you know, Wayne Rooney, I think I think as a Manchester United fan, it's time for him to go. I mean, you don't hear many athletes in many sports, or at least I don't, coming back from their summer holidays, you know, overweight, out of shape. And, you know, I think if you're good, 5 years ago, there was Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, and Wayne Rooney, and they were the three next big things. And since then, Ronaldo and Messi have taken the game to epic heights, and Rooney hasn't really
progressed. He hasn't been in the running, even for Golden Boot Awards, you know, for the Golden Ball, all that stuff. He hasn't been in the running for that. I think he's got, like, a little, almost like a Napoleon complex behind all of it, you know, like a little man syndrome behind it. Yeah. And it's not because of, you know, his player tenacity, but I think also his attitude, also on the field and off the field, is something that holds him back. He's not a terrible person, but I think that he kind of whines and a little too much about things like that. That's why he wants to leave.
Yeah. Well, I think it'll be interesting to know where do you think he might end up, guys? Quick poll.
Oh,
one club.
It has to be PSG. That's PSG? The only place that will pay for him.
FC Dallas.
I mean, logically, he would fit in at Bayern.
Oh,
just because big club with money to spend.
Yeah, there's very few clubs that would take it. But I don't know whether, I mean, you alluded to the German efficiency earlier, and whether they'd take a player who turns up unfit for pre-season, I can't really say. Especially with, I mean, they're getting rid of Gomez, and I'd rather have Gomez than Wayne Rooney. They're about to get Lewandowski. They have Mandzukic.
I can see him in Germany.
You can see him in Germany?
Believe it or not, Chelsea.
Chelsea, whether he'll go to another English team, could happen. There's been rumors.
He won't want to leave England.
Will the Glazers sell to another English team? That's the biggest thing.
Yeah, I don't think that's the biggest thing. But you know, it's widely known that English players don't really like going abroad. I mean, there's very few. I mean, in the past what, 10 years off the top of my head, it's Owen and Woodgate and Beckham went to Real Madrid, for the, you know. I mean, apart from
Arsenal
that,
Arsenal will buy him. Next one you think of is Chelsea. And well, Mourinho is, you know, Mourinho.
Arsenal wouldn't be able to afford his, his a quarter of a million dollar wages.
I could see Mourinho trying to steal him in there just to mess with Man United.
Mess with Man United? Well, we'll see.
They'll get him on a short contract, 1 year.
1 year. Well, speaking of, you made the joke about FC Dallas, and we'll come on later about that. We'll just keep that in the back of my mind for the new, the 20th MLS club. Okay. Now, the big news, obviously, we mentioned Chelsea. Jose Mourinho is coming back. Yeah. I know you're pretty excited about that.
I am. You know, I have a lot of respect for Mourinho. I think he's a phenomenal coach. You know, he didn't have a lucrative playing career, and a lot of the top coaches in the world didn't. But he, you know, he's the master. He's a special one, as he says. And I think that he knew, even if, when he saw him at Inter Milan, you know, he would joke about, you know, coming back, or that, you know, Stamford Bridge was his house, and that, you know, Chelsea was his team. He was eating the cookies during the press conference. I mean, he was always very, very passionate about coming back to England. And I think that everyone knew that he wanted to go back to Chelsea because he had unfinished business. But you can love him or hate him. But, I mean, he has proven time and time again that through his style of coaching, his relationship, you know, talk to his players, everyone loves him. No one hates him. You know, he can be arrogant.
If you ask Real Madrid players, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. Ask Iker Casillas.
Okay, well, here's the thing about Real Madrid is Real Madrid. I mean, you got a Portuguese coach who didn't have a strong playing career with Spanish players with big egos. So you put the guys like Casillas. When you put the guys like Sergio Ramos, even Pepe, you know, he's Portuguese, but the other two, they're going to go after him a little bit when he doesn't do things their way. I mean, come on. He benched Casillas saying that Diego Lopez is his starter as long as he's there. He wanted to leave, and Casillas didn't like it. It's like you talk to the, you know, the holy grail of, you know, soccer in Spain when you bench him and stuff like that, and no one had the goal to ever do something like that. And he didn't care because he knew he was a coach at the end of the day. So I have a lot of respect for him. You look at when he started, when he left what's it, Barcelona as an assistant manager under Van Gaal, you know, he went to Benfica for a short bit. You know, he had success there, then Unai Lara, and he, you know, had them finish the top they ever finished in the previous 10 years. Porto, Champions League, Chelsea, you know, won the Premier League. I mean,
back
go to
back,
Inter,
yeah.
Champions League, Real Madrid, they get trophies, and now he's coming back to Chelsea. I think it's a great thing for soccer, but I think he wishes Sir Alex was still there.
You wish he was, they have the back and forth banter between them both. Any word on Mourinho, Kevin?
I like him. I wish, alluding to his point, I do wish it was still the big four. You know, Mancini still at Man City, Sir Alex at Man U, and Wagner and him, just in the old days, just go back, just to see the fireworks, and now AVB and what Brendan Rodgers is doing at Liverpool, just to see that those six teams to go at it.
I certainly think Chelsea will be more competitive next season with Mourinho than they would have been without him. Although I think Rafa Benitez was a bit hard done by the Chelsea fans. But I think Mourinho's a fantastic coach. Brad said his history very well. He's phenomenal. He's a trump card.
And he's walking into a beautiful situation. Yeah. What, five players under 22 with Hazard, Oscar, you know, Everton, but, you know.
So I would say this Chelsea team he's walking into potentially are better than the one that won the back-to-back leagues that he did. I mean, potentially. I mean, the striker situation maybe is something to sort out. You'd take Drogba a million times over Torres, but Hazard and Oscar and Mata.
Mark my words. I think that Jose Mourinho, when he comes into Chelsea, he's going to change the soccer culture again. He's going to change it. He's going
to
change.
Is he going to give
practices.
The power to Terry and Lampard and Cech again?
He likes I know he likes Terry and Lampard, and I know that he likes the culture. I mean, he, you know, texts John Terry, texts Lampard. He has a relationship with these players in this club. He's coming back to a situation where I think he feels more comfortable in there because he knew he was coming back. You know, despite, you know, ownership and trying to tell him what to do, he's proved that one time around that you cannot bully me or tell me what to do. So coming back there, I promise you, and I bet my life on it, there's going to be contract stipulations in his contract saying he's got the final word, he
you
is the
so?
Boss. Absolutely. He wouldn't come back unless they did
that. Because you're right, that was the issue beforehand. Yeah. He didn't have total control, and that's what he wanted.
They wanted Shevchenko, right?
Yeah. He also started with that same contract, too, and then they started winning. And then Roman started coming in. He started with that same thing where he can plan it. And I don't think Roman's
Because they put Frank Arneson as the director of football, and he was buying Shevchenko for crazy amounts of money, buying these players he didn't want them.
And that's the thing people don't realize, is that in professional soccer, especially overseas, a lot of times the coaches don't have as much say on the players that are being bought. Your technical director, your director of operations, your
director
your GM
of football,
will take the players, and the coach is supposed to build them. And I promise you this, when Mourinho signed with Chelsea, they went on it was a Roman's yacht, and they spent, like, you know, whatever many days on the yacht and talked about his contract, all that stuff. You gotta understand, this is a coach who just won the Champions League with Porto before he went to Chelsea. So he's coming to the, you know, the English game. He's got a big ego. He's ready for it. He's confident. And he's gonna sign that big contract. He left. Roman knows why he left. Roman knows Mourinho. Mourinho knows Roman. He called it a beautiful divorce. But now both sides of the party knows what needs to be done for him to be there. And I promise you, Roman is not going to... Look how many managers they went through after Mourinho. He's going to have to take a back seat, and he knows he has to keep him.
We'll just see. We'll see in 3 years.
We'll see. I don't think Mourinho will be there in 3 years. Yeah.
That's what I say. We'll see in three years. Maybe, let's see where,
maybe,
what happens.
Without doubt, he's a fantastic coach. But now onto your team, Kevin. Tottenham. Gareth Bale is going to Real Madrid, isn't he? That's what the rumor mill is, no?
Probably not. Right now, probably not. But if Real Madrid does throw £80 million at us, I'm okay with it. I mean, I won't.
For $120 million, would you take it? $120 million?
Because with $80 million, we can buy 4 players.
Oh, you have your wish list. Uh huh.
No, we can actually, because this is what the current asking prices are. Benteke for $15 million from Aston Villa.
Okay.
Eriksen for $15 million from Ajax. Ben Halda for 10 to 15 mil. And I forget where he plays from. And then Luke Shaw for $15 million. Those are 4 players, and still $20 million for Levy's dream stadium. So, now do I want him to go? No, he's brilliant. He came up with it. The biggest question is there's three things that when there's transfers, there's a club that needs to sell. There's a club that's willing to buy, and then of course the players really got to go. Right now, is Tottenham really willing to sell? And right now, I don't think so. I think we're gonna do. He saw what happened with Modric, complaining, and then going to Real Madrid and not even getting playing time.
Yeah.
So he saw, and Bale's smart. Plus, he also has his wag, his high school sweetheart, who just has a 6-month-old child. So, to be honest with you, I think he stays one more year, and if we don't make Champions League.
Then he's off?
He's off.
It was interesting, Zidane's comments last week. Zinedine Zidane came out and said, you know, he was doing an interview and he was very dismissive of the interviewer. And then as soon as Gareth Bale's name brought up, his eyes lit up. He's like, Bale, he's that Real Madrid player.
He's that left-footed player they need.
Fantastic player. Now, with him and Cristiano Ronaldo being in the same team, be interesting to see that.
Also, Kaká, Di Maria, Ozil, where are they going to put him at attacking midfielder? They're pretty stacked there too.
He'd play on the wing. He would play on the wing.
Yeah, I think.
With Di Maria inside.
I think he'd play on the wing too. I mean, we'll see. See if it happens. The other rumor was he'd go to Manchester United, which of course I would absolutely love.
If that happens, that's £100 million right there. Though that's basic £100 million. Levy won't.
I don't know if you're aware of this, Kevin. Being on this side of the pond, but in England, Tottenham are known for solving Manchester United's problems. Whether it's Michael Carrick, whether it's Dimitar Berbatov, you fix our problem. So Gareth Bale's the next problem. We need a future Ryan Giggs.
And like I said, Levy will sell him within, but for $100, it's going to cost y'all. Yeah.
And David Beckham grew up loving Tottenham Hotspur. His grandfather is a huge Tottenham fan.
He did the training academy. Yeah, almost signed him. That would have been happy. I would have been ecstatic. But you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Like I said, I think all signs point to Bale staying for a year. We don't qualify, we sell, because he is a world, I mean, he's getting up to the world class status, and he does deserve to go. It wouldn't be with Berbatov or Modric, where I hate him for leaving, because they just complained and they're just, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
If you talk to any Spurs fan about Keane, he said, he's like, I want to go play for Liverpool, my boyhood club. We can't. He was honest with us, not like we're a little rat in Modric. So
well, that's a fair point. But you guys finished, Tottenham finished fifth. Again, well, behind Arsenal.
If Bayern Munich had done their job last year.
Well, maybe. But you know, that's changing. The rules are changing now. That from now on, that situation won't happen. There won't be. The winner of the Champions League will still qualify, and the fifth best team would still get in. Or the fourth. Yeah, finished fourth, right?
We finished fourth last year.
That's right. So, but speaking of Arsenal. I mean, whether you guys think they're going to compete next year, I mean, every single year, for what was it, 8 seasons, Arsene Wenger hasn't been able to win a trophy for Arsenal. They say that they have money to spend. He doesn't spend it. They finished 4th this season, and which at one stage looked very unlikely. But how many points were they behind Manchester United by the end of the season? 25? 26? It was just... They're not competing. Will they spend money to compete? I mean...
Nope.
But, you know, I think so.
Do you think
they have money to spend? Because they say they do. Do you think they do?
I mean, if you look at all the clubs in England, I mean, even Manchester United themselves are in huge debt. Arsene Wenger, people have to understand, and this is actually a good topic. There's a couple of books out there, The 90 Minute Manager, Soccernomics. Arsene Wenger, people don't know this, but the movie Moneyball, with the baseball and the Oakland A's and the GM, whose name is escaping me right now, even though I watched the movie like 3 nights ago.
Billy Bean,
that's right. What people don't understand is that actually Billy Bean visited Arsene Wenger to talk to him about his process on it. You know, he's an educated man in finance, economics, went to school and studied that. His way of processing and analyzing player development and skills is amazing, you know, on how many miles they run per game, how many touches they have, this and that. That's why Arsene Wenger can go buy these cheap players that he knows is good, that'll fit his system, and then sell them off. That's the club's objective. I don't know if their objective is, you know, it's sad to say that, is, you know, as much of maintaining financial status as it is winning the Premier League and all that stuff. But, I mean, he's notorious for not wanting to buy players, and he's notorious for developing the players that he has.
I think he earlier on in his Arsenal career, he would kind of push the bird out more, whether it's Jose Antonio Reyes for, like, what was it, almost $30 million. Complete failure at 21. I think he bought Francis Jeffers. He's an English guy. I think he bought him for like 12, 15 million. Complete disaster. So whenever he did push the bet out, it didn't work. And whenever he, back in the past, he bought all those French players. He bought Patrick Vieira, Thierry Henry, Emmanuel Petit. But that was a generation of French players that were unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, European Championships and World Cup, but, you know, back to back. So World Cup 98, Euro 2000. You know, nowadays, I think the problem with Wenger is that what he was doing in the late 1990s, every other club has caught up to that. You know, that everyone's scouting is on the continental Europe is equally as good, and he hasn't improved. And I don't think he's willing to spend money, because I think, as Brad, you know, alluded to, I don't think the club's objective is to win the Premier League. I think they want to remain profitable, and, well, if we get in the Champions League every year...
That's right. Get that bonus.
Then we'll take it. I don't think they have any objective to win.
And that stinks for Arsenal fans.
Well, it stinks for Arsenal fans because they pay the most for season tickets in the whole of England, which is...
And look how bad Tottenham wants to be in the Champions League, and this team is just doing their thing and barely getting in. And it's also the style of play they play.
It's interesting I'll come back to you, sorry, Ken. What Thierry Henry said in an interview with Sky Sports, which is owned by Fox News, if anyone that doesn't know. And Thierry Henry said that, you know, the last game of the season, when all the Arsenal players were celebrating, that they had come forth, he said, "I hope they're celebrating because they made sure that Tottenham aren't in the Champions League. They better not be celebrating because they finished fourth." And, you know, I think the players were celebrating because they finished fourth. You know?
Yep.
But, yeah, sorry, Kevin.
And it goes back. They wouldn't be in if Tottenham hadn't dropped a 2-0 lead against Liverpool, lost to Wigan on the road, you know, it's just, or tied Wigan, lost to Wigan at home, you know, it just, they wouldn't have been, and I understand,
do you think that Tottenham slump by the end of the season was due to the Europa League?
Not really.
Playing that Thursday, Sunday.
It was more just injuries, I mean, and also no PKs. We're the only team in the Premiership League that had zero PKs.
I think that's your old mate Gareth Bale's reputation. Going
I know. Even when he did actually deserve a PK. But going back to Arsenal, I don't know if they actually will spend. And there's... I mean, they're a great club. I hate them. And I'm... You know, those early 2000s when it was them and Man U going back-to-back at each other. It's just... But right now, I don't think Wenger's going to spend his... I think his ego's too high now. And he's just going to continue to try to do Billy Bean.
Yeah. Well, one thing also we didn't brush on, and I just thought of right now, is that it's very important to also realize the academy, the youth academies these clubs have. Arsenal's culture and youth academy, you know, Arsene Wenger has a lot of control over it, developing players from the youth ranks into the first team, developing the players and all over England that, you know, that these clubs have. And a lot of these coaches also look into that. They're very involved with it. And Arsenal's academy is notorious for developing phenomenal players. So go bring them in from the youth squad into the professional team. So, you know, we don't know necessarily how many of the Arsenal players or youth academy players right now that are being developed. Maybe that's why he's not selling, but I've seen them play in the Dallas Cup. You know, they come here and they do very well. And you see the players are phenomenal.
But,
yeah. So.
But I think it was Man U versus Tottenham's under-21 teams in the finals for the under-21.
For the Premier League under-21.
I think
with Arsenal, it's, I don't see many players coming from their youth academy, if I'm honest. I mean, the young players that they do have in the team, they bought. Whether it's Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, whether it's Theo Walcott, I mean, they bought him. And then Cesc Fabregas, they pipped him from Barcelona's youth academy, and then because they don't win anything, they have to sell these players. So, I mean,
wouldn't that be
I couldn't think of... In England, Arsenal are notorious for having no English players in their team. Now, slightly, that's changed a few, you know, a bit over the years. Like I say, with Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Ramsey, I know he's Welsh, you count him as British. But, I mean, I just can't see Arsenal winning anything. I couldn't even think of one Arsenal youth player that's come through their thing. I mean, not Ramsey, they bought him from Cardiff City, who are going to be in the Premier League next season. They couldn't think of one, whereas you look at Manchester United and... You have people like Cleverley, or you have people like Danny Welbeck, that, or Johnny Evans, that came and they're a regular first team starter. We can even go back to the classic 92 team with Gary Neville and David Beckham and Ryan Giggs and Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt, all these players that actually came from the youth team and made it as stars. And I think Arsenal have kind of lost their way in that, and I can't really see anyone coming through. But I think they'll compete. They'll still finish like... I can't see them finishing
fourth.
Like seventh or something.
Yeah, always fourth, fifth.
You know, they're going to finish fourth. You couldn't see them slipping down. They just seem to make it somehow. And I think we'll take a break. Kevin, I want you to discuss Luis Suarez and Brad. We're going to talk a bit about MLS soccer.
All right. Sounds good.
Thanks, guys. Welcome back to On the Ball. Having a bit of issues here. Anyway, we were discussing the summer's comings and goings in the transfer window. Managers leaving, players going. That kind of jazz. And Kevin, you wanted to talk about Luis Suarez. I mean, is he following your man Gareth Bale to Real Madrid? He's unhappy. What's going on?
You know, there's this one chant that I read on Reddit.com.
It's not abusive, is it, Kevin?
No, it's kind of funny. It's he dives, he bites, he hates the Jackson 5, Luis Suarez. You know, Suarez is world class. We can't deny it. We saw in the World Cup. And it's kind of funny.
We saw a handball on the line in the World Cup.
If you're not in Uruguay, if you're not from Uruguay or a Liverpool fan, you can't stand Suarez. But I mean, he helped us out by helping tie Arsenal. But I think his reasoning for leaving England is dumb, saying the press and.
They're hounding him.
Well, but it's his fault, you know?
No pun intended, but he bit like a dog.
I know.
Ivanovic on the arm and stuff like that.
I mean, and then racially abused. I mean, it's his fault for bringing this. But I think he's going to go to Real Madrid. Real Madrid could use him. Spanish market, loves Spanish, you know, Latin American players. And he can actually come in. As long as he's scoring goals, Real Madrid will look the other way. But once he stops scoring goals, then I think the Spanish press will eat him up.
What happens to Brendan Rodgers' revolution at Liverpool? They're on an upward spiral, and now they're going to lose their best player, their outstanding player.
The thing is, I mean, with Brendan Rodgers, what can you do? I mean, they lost Suarez for, what, half? I mean, 10 games now for the bite, and what was racial abusing?
Patrice Evra.
Rodgers Evra, and they lost him for another 10. I mean, it's just, you can't count on him, and I think Brendan Rodgers... was playing him, but also always having a backup plan in his mind, waiting for the red card.
Well, that brings up a good question. I'll ask Brad, because Brad does a lot of coaching with youngsters. When does it come to a point where a player's behavior off the field negates how brilliant he is on the field?
I think that the most important thing to consider is first is what level, you know, you're at. You know, when you're in, you know, the English Premier League, it's important for coaches to understand that, one, these players are professional players. This is their job. If the off the field is affecting the team, the player, then that's when the coach has to, you know, interfere or, you know, I guess, you know, use the power struggle between the two to say, hey, this is affecting the team, this is affecting the club, this is affecting your job. You're paid to be a player, you're paid to act accordingly, you're paid to represent the club. But at the same time, you have to understand that these high-profile players and teams have egos that are just as big as the coaches. People don't understand that. Coaches do have egos as well, and so do players. So a lot of times I can see coaches trying to go a little too hard. Every coach has this ideal mindset that, oh, that trouble player, oh, that, you know, wild horse, I can tame him, I can make him into, you know, a first-class player in person, yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, they also know that that's not their job at the end of the day. And the end of the day is to have the players play and win games. So when you have a striker like Luis Suarez, he's phenomenal. And you know that you have to, I guess, adhere to certain things and let, you know, pick which battles you want to win. But as a coach, I think you have to always have a backup plan, you know. Always have to have a backup plan, but at the same time, do what you can to maintain the team's identity, maintain the team's personality, and maintain your star player's identity personality without affecting it overall. So I think it depends on the manner of the situation.
I think that's true too. I think a point that we have to touch on is obviously the owners of Liverpool, owners of Boston Red Sox too. Now, what do you think those guys would say at the very top level in ownership? Would they think it's a bit of a public relations disaster having a pretty volatile player, although brilliant he may be, whether it's biting people or racially abusing them, that thing last season with the T-shirts after he racially abused Evra, and Kenny Dalglish made the players wanted to wear the shirts to support this guy who had effectively racially abused another professional player. Now, do you think, especially I find, being a Brit, I find Americans a lot more conscious about that kind of public relations thing. So how would you find the American owners of Liverpool? Would they think, thank God he wants to leave because we wanted to get rid of him?
No. Nope.
You don't think so?
I'm a huge Red Sox fan. That's my team. No.
No?
The ownership group of the Red Sox, this is back 2 years ago. Back a couple years ago, the Red Sox had a incident where a couple of the players, we were losing, we were getting blown out. A couple of players just left the dugout and went to go eat fried chicken and beer during the middle of the game.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
They just, and we ended up training the players a year later,
yeah.
But they didn't care. It's just all about the almighty dollar.
It's about the money.
For Henry, the Henry ownership group.
Well, if they were to get an offer reported of about, I think it's about $65 million.
$65, I mean, they'd take it?
Would they take it for Lewis?
Look at how many jerseys he sells, though, you know? That's the thing. How many jerseys does he sell? How marketable is he? What cut do they get out of his contract for endorsements and sponsorship deals? You know, those things are also important. I think when you're talking about PR-wise, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in sports. A lot of stuff that goes on in sports. A lot of times when things like this happen, the club has to end up paying part of the fine. If the, you know, if FIFA or the league doesn't mandate the player to pay the fine, the club has to pay it. But that's pennies to them. If you're talking about £25,000 or $25,000 for this or that, that's pennies. But the guy sells, you know, $22 million in jerseys and endorsements. Well, you know, let's do the, you know, the math behind it. Of course they want to keep him. But if you're talking about buying for $65 million or something like that, buy.
Right.
You know.
I mean, interesting to see. I mean, if he does go to Real Madrid, the Premier League undoubtedly have lost a great player, no matter what we think of him personally. 23 goals last season, that's because he couldn't play the last three games. So that's why Robin Van Persie got the 25 to win. And then, you know, if he does go to Real Madrid, well, I mean, they do have Higuain, they do have Benzema, they sometimes play Ronaldo through the centre as well.
Jose Calahon.
You know, Calahon or De Maria. So whether he fits in or not, I mean, there's talk that Higuain will leave. So I guess we'll see.
Real Madrid's in trouble.
You think they're in trouble?
They're in trouble.
Obviously, Mourinho leaving.
Mourinho's gone. That's their first problem.
Well, they want Carlo Ancelotti now.
Okay, but he's not Mourinho.
Well, Carlo Ancelotti's a good coach. I think
he's a good coach, but very
underrated. He's won the Champions League with, what, two different teams?
I think identity-wise, playing style, Real Madrid's in trouble. I mean, you can stack the house with the best attacking players in the world, but if you think about that, that's what's been Real Madrid's problem.
Yeah.
Is you have so many great attacking players. You have solid, but they can't play together. You know, they can't play the ball together. If you got guys that, you know, want to do free-form play, you have a 4-4-2, then sometimes you want to go 4-3-3, then you want to go 4-1-3-2. It depends on what your formation is. Some players like space, some players don't. And the reason why they're so good at the clubs they came from is because they utilize a certain formation or a style of play. Now you put all them together with guys who like to play a 4-3-3, some like 4-4-2, some want to be the lone striker, some want to be a roaming player. Imagine a lineup where five of your attacking players are all roaming players in their former clubs. Mm. And then you ask them to tactically be put into a certain situation. It doesn't work.
But are we being a bit harsh on Real Madrid? I mean, before this season that's just gone by, they did score over 100 goals in the league. They did have, I think it was 95 points, which was the highest in La Liga history.
Well, they pounded teams that weren't at their level. You know, but you have to understand that as well.
But you, at the same, I'm very critical of La Liga. I'll be the first person to say I think it's a two-team league. But at the same time, you can only beat what's in front of you. And, you know, see, I think, like, this is where Mourinho deserves credit. And I think you're right, they're going to miss out on him. They're going to miss him. It's because he completely broke that Barcelona stranglehold on La Liga. Completely. And he didn't just break it, he tore it apart. I mean, this season, I think, this is why I don't think they'll miss him, is his behavior off the field, which I think really cost him the Manchester United job, not getting that. And I think there's only a certain amount of times where you can behave badly, whether it's poking another coach in the eye.
That was like, what, 2 years ago, though? He didn't poke him in the eye. He was just trying to tap him and say, excuse me, please go back to your sideline. And you know what? In his defense, too, they were going crazy on him as well. I mean, people don't understand this, so I want to say this.
Yeah.
Mourinho has a certain relationship with Barcelona. And he was at Barcelona.
Former translator.
But, okay, this is where he gets pissed off right there. It's because people say former translator. He was not just a former translator. Well, he was an assistant coach. But that's what the Barca fans yell at him when he comes there. They call him the translator. They like to demean him. So, when you saw Inter, defeat Barca in the Champions League, and he ran and did his number one finger to the fans, and then Valdez comes and tries to tell him that. He's got an ego trip. Not necessarily ego trip. He's just got a vendetta against Barca because they didn't show him respect. They promised him a first-team position job. Then they promised him a position to be the head of the academy, and they always cut him down. And you know what? He's human too, believe it or not. I'm human. We're all human. There will be clubs out there that we do not like because of, and especially coaching-wise, because of how they treated you as a coach. I think because he wasn't a great player, they didn't respect him. He went and he was under Van Gaal. He hated Van Gaal, but he loved the tactics that Van Gaal did in his practices. And they didn't give him the respect he deserved. He goes and defeats them. Every time he plays Barcelona, it's a passionate game. They call him the translator. They don't give him respect. So I don't have too much animosity for how he treats, Barcelona, because they don't treat him well either.
And I think you're right, and he makes no secret that he's not going to be Barcelona manager ever. I think he's come out and said that numerous times. What do you guys think about Manchester City? I mean, they lost the Premier League title this year. Roberto Mancini has been sacked effectively.
Terrible decision.
Maybe a terrible, we'll come on to that. And now they're going to get Manuel Pellegrini, a guy who's a former Real Madrid coach that, in all fairness, didn't do anything at Real Madrid. Did well with Malaga this year, considering they're completely bankrupt, but yet got them, I think, to the quarterfinals of the Champions League.
Yep.
What's up with Manchester City? Are they going to have to spend big, or did Mancini just underutilize the players he had, or what happened? Is he a bad coach? Should he have been fired, Kevin?
No, like Brad said, he shouldn't have been fired. It's not.
I think so. Needed more time.
It's Man's. No, not even more time. Come on, Man City. They win 1 year of the Premiership, and now they think they're the big club. I mean, 1 year. I know you probably know it more because you're across the pond, but I mean, I would have killed this one Premiership, and I wouldn't have thought we were badass and fire our coach the next year.
I think the interesting thing about Manchester City is that you had a team. And you tell any Manchester City fan, they don't want to be considered like Chelsea, a club that just fires their managers willy-nilly. But yet, you have the two head guys, obviously, at Manchester City now, are former Barcelona guys. And they come out last week and say, well, our next manager has to win 5 trophies in 5 years. You just had... Roberto Mancini was there for how many years? 2 or 3? And he won the FA Cup, the Premier League. I think he might have won the League Cup.
And when was the last time Man City made the Premier League?
Absolutely. You know,
what a ridiculous statement to make. Well, what if the coach, okay, Pellegrini comes in, he doesn't win anything for 2 years, but, you know, in the third year he wins 5 trophies or something, you know. And then he wins nothing the next year. You know, you're going to sack him.
The ambition of professional soccer. It's the ambition of the EPL. It's the ambition of the ownership. I mean, let's be real here. Okay, I remember also back in the day, Man City was a joke. They were the little brother to Man United. They had those blue jerseys. No one cared. They came, got new ownership. They got big dollar bills, you know. And they were able to revitalize and create a new club. It is a new club. I don't even call it Man City. I call it the new Man City, okay? They can play. Everyone who plays FIFA out there likes to play with Man City also. And when you play FIFA online, you don't like to play against Man City because they do that chip through ball every single time. And, you know, they have those guys in the first-time shots, and Tevez and all this stuff, Aguero. I mean, it's terrible. So they were able to create a new club. Now, as far as firing the coach, terrible decision because they're being too ambitious. The guy brings you the Premier League title, and you get rid of the guy. They didn't let the new club grow.
Can I play devil's advocate?
Go ahead.
Well, he's in the Champions League 2 seasons running and failed to make the group stages. And even failed
God
to...
God forbid, the Champions League, the Holy Grail, and everything.
Harry Redknapp took Tottenham to the the round of 16, quarterfinals.
He had two cracks at it. His record at Inter Milan in the Champions League was dreadful. As soon as he goes out of Inter Milan, Mourinho comes in. Okay, Mourinho's a fantastic coach. He didn't really buy anyone, and they win the Champions League, but Mancini couldn't do anything with them. And, you know, his record in the Champions League with Man City, although this season, I mean, look, he was in a group with Ajax, who aren't a bad team, young team, with Christian
the group
Eriksen.
They had the group of death.
And they did have the Borussia Dortmund, who
went to the finals.
Who you said earlier, no one really saw them doing as well as they did. And obviously Real Madrid, still a fantastic team. So they were unlucky this season. But how many points did I think they only got 1 point? 6 games? I mean, it was ridiculous.
They lost
for the amount of money that he has spent and the players at his disposal to not, you know, I'll give you this. If Sir Alex Ferguson had managed and coached Manchester City at the beginning of this past season, they would have won the league.
I don't know. I think he might need a little more time because you guys understand managing a team isn't something that is just a 1 year you come in and create the team and culture. Players have to believe in you. There has to be a set schedule, rotation, all this stuff. There's so many things that go behind it. That's why you need a couple of years. But I think that Manchester City's ownership needs to say, our priority is to win the Champions League. Our priority is to qualify for Champions League, win Champions League. You're talking about 5 trophies in 5 years. Okay, let's go win the nitty-gritty. Let's go do the FA Cup, whatever, this and that, Shield, or go do this. I don't care. But they want to be Champions League. There's only one, you know, you can't have another Sir Alex. You can't have another Mourinho. But you have to trust in the process of having that coach develop your club culture. And your club culture goes down when people think that, okay, well, we win the Premier League, but because we didn't do as well as the Champions League, he's sacked.
Yeah.
The club culture and the confidence in ownership goes down. But that's the beauty of being the owner. You got to do whatever you want.
Well, speaking of club culture, more than a club, it's Barcelona's motto. Mm-hmm. Just signed the Brazilian sensation, the superstar, the next big thing, Neymar.
Terrible.
Now, I think hit the nail on the head, and I'll ask you guys your opinion in a second. I think here's a guy who, he's a YouTube player. There's all these clips on YouTube of him doing all these great skills, and he's had 30 Brazilian caps, 22 goals. It's a fantastic record. But whenever he's come up against a team of genuine class, he's done
like
nothing. Like 3 years ago, he played Santos against Barcelona in the World Cup final. Didn't do anything. They got hammered. It went to the Olympics. Didn't do anything in the Olympics. Played, who else did he play?
Is that Brazilian music? I mean,
that, oh, it's almost
Brazilian music. Yeah, it's a sign
perfect
for
timing.
The soccer gods. They put on the Brazilian music. Come on,
they knew what we were talking about. But, you know, here's a guy that, okay, it's good to score all those goals in the Brazilian league, but I can't see how he's proven anything.
Right.
What was his final transfer price?
I think it was £30 million, which is about, I think, $42 million.
Too much. He's not there yet. He's not developed yet.
Look at what we talked. $30 million. What Van Persie got? 23. You know.
Yeah.
Cesc went for Fabregas went for, I think, I forgot how much.
He's young though. Neymar's very young.
Yeah.
So they see
but unproven.
Unproven.
but here's the thing about Neymar, and that's, you know, he talked a lot to the press about, I want to stay in Brazil
till after the World
Cup.
That's right.
He wants to support, he wants a passion, he wants a culture, and in Latin American, you know, culture, you know, your word on that and family and staying close is like, you know, it's second to none. Now, Neymar, when you take this kid out and put him in Barcelona, granted, he has a skill, he has a flair, he has a technical ability. I don't know if he has a tactical ability to play there yet. I think he's still a developing player. He's young. I think that, you know, he's going to be very frustrated in the league. I don't see the kid starting right away. I don't see the kid being, you know, you got to look at this. He performed well in Brazil, but the quality of defenders in Brazil and the style to Spain is different.
Yeah.
You know, the physical turmoil. He's not a big kid, man. This kid weighs probably 145, graciously 145 tops. I mean, you know, you put him against guys who run like horses and a style like that, and then the pressure behind it. In Brazil, he was loved because he's Brazilian. He plays for the national team. He's the next big thing. They loved him. He was coddled. He has that comfort zone in Brazil. You go to Spain, where it's brutal, he's a Brazilian. He's not one of them. This is a psychological mindset of a player they have to consider. But, again, the price tag, he's young, maybe he'll develop, who knows?
You know, it actually may have been better for him to just go to Porto.
You think they go to Portuguese?
He speaks Portuguese.
I mean, just for a couple of years to get used to it. Might have been beneficial for him to go to Porto or Benfica. One of those two, and then make the transfer to.
I'll do my prediction. My prediction is that Neymar will be a complete flop. He'll still have I'm sure he's playing in a great Barcelona team. He'll probably score a few goals.
I can score a goal when Messi sets us up.
He'll be in open play, but I think his mindset will be like a lot of these Brazilians at the end of their careers, and it will tail off. I mean,
go back to Brazil.
Here's a random thing: is that he's just started a relationship with a novella star, a sitcom or a soap star, as we say in England. And, you know, that's going to put a strain on a relationship when he's 21 years old. His wife's not, his girlfriend's not going to go over. It's a full-time job being in TV over there.
And he's in love.
And he's in love. Well, same with Alexandre Pato was engaged to Silvio Berlusconi, the head of AC Milan's girlfriend. And that's put a strain on his career. And where's Pato now? He's gone back to Brazil. I mean,
that's the culture again. They all want to be comfortable, go back there and go back to home. And Neymar, I agree with you. I think he will be a flop. But I tell you this also. I'm more concerned if I was the head coach of the Brazil national team. I'm more concerned about the World Cup because this kid is going over there and he's going to be there for an entire year. You don't know injury. You don't know psychologically what's going to do to him if he doesn't play, all this stuff. And then you want to bring the kid back to go play in the world's most competitive tournament.
I think the Brazilian police are worried about the Brazilian World Cup if they don't make it to the finals.
Well, Brazil will be in the final. Quickly talk about Monaco. Just got promoted, people don't know, from the second division in France in Ligue 2. They're now in Ligue 1. Sorry if I butchered the French language there, the pronunciation. But they've just come up, just been promoted. Former Chelsea and Inter Milan manager Claudio Ranieri is their coach. They've just spent $167 million on four players, which is James Rodriguez, that any Colombian or South American fans would know. Glad I didn't say James. It's James Rodriguez. João Moutinho, the Portuguese Porto guy, had been linked a lot to the Premier League and Tottenham Hotspur, Kevin's team wanted. And they just bought Ricardo Carvalho, former Real Madrid and Chelsea man, although for a free transfer.
He's like 49.
I think he's about 36, 37. But that was for free. And this morning just got confirmed, Radamel Falcao, Colombian sensation, over 50 goals for Atletico Madrid
this
season.
He's still playing?
He's 24, I think.
He looks like he's 40.
He came from River Plate's youth system, funny enough, even though he's Colombian. He just signed today for £51 million, which is $68 million. So that's their spending, $167 million. Will they challenge Paris Saint-Germain, David Beckham's former team, with Zlatan Ibrahimovic? Will they compete with them next season in the French top league? And is it wise to sign all these players at once? And what about financial fair play?
Well, it's kind of, financial fair play, but it's kind of funny where Monaco is now the new PSG, and PSG was the new Man City, you know. So
the two nouveau riche clubs in France.
The two rich clubs in the French, but you know, I don't know if they're actually this year. I don't think they're gonna. They'll do well. They may qualify for the Champions. I don't think they'll overtake Paris PSG.
They're spending it's going to get linked with Carlos Tevez this morning as well.
That's what I was reading those rumors too. But, I mean, will they win? No, because you're just bringing a bunch of players. And, it took Man City, what, a year or two to finally get its groove? Yeah. Paris Saint-Germain, I mean, PSG, you have Ibrahimovic just in the middle, so you can just throw balls to him whenever
Levetzi,
he wants.
Lucas Moura. My man David Beckham's clearly retired, but PSG be under a bit of turmoil. We kind of discussed it before about Carlo Ancelotti. Maybe he wants to go to Real Madrid. He's asked to leave. Their director of football, Leonardo, former AC Milan player. Great Brazilian player. And he's been banned for, I think, 6 months, 9 months for shoving a referee. There's a lot of turmoil.
If Monaco wins, it's going to lead to financial fair play. Just because another oil baron's going to come in and be like, oh, I can build my dream team.
Right.
Yeah. And then from there buy another team somewhere.
Financial fair play has already started. It's supposed to come more into effect next season.
In England, but I mean, Spain.
It's a UEFA thing.
Man City is so sad now. Oh, my goodness. But
The Man City, the reason why, basically financial fair play, if anyone doesn't know.
It's because of Man City.
It means you can, because even Chelsea, you can look yeah. far back. Financial fair play, you can only spend a percentage of what you make.
It's like NFL.
So you basically have to make a profit. Now, what Manchester City, there's always ways around everything. And what Manchester City, they're owned by, I believe it's the Qatar royal family.
That's a good owner.
And that's a great owner. You know, one of the wealthiest families in the world. Now, they own an airline called Etihad, right? Or the Etihad, I suppose. It depends on one's pronunciation. And, well, look, Manchester City, they're spending hundreds of millions on buying players. Well, look, they're spending more than they make, right? On sponsorship. It's not historically a big club. Well, look, the owners of Man City just conveniently own the Etihad airline. So what did they do? Oh, well, our airline's going to sponsor our team. And, you know, profits. But we're going to sponsor it for 80 million like every year. Well, that's a way around it. You can use your other business to subsidize your other business. So there's always ways around it. But one quick thing about Monaco is you have Falcao, Chelsea wanted him, Man City
but
wanted
it's
him.
Kind of funny, though, with him, just to interrupt you, with him, I was reading now that he was actually, his rights were actually owned by three different investment groups.
That's like Neymar.
He was owned by three investment groups. So Falcao never actually had a choice to pick where he wanted to go. Yeah. They were just going to go to which team was going to buy whatever investment group's going to make a profit off of him.
Like, third-party ownership was what got Carlos Tevez in trouble when he was at West Ham, and they didn't get points deducted.
I think one of them was 40%. I think one investment group was
40%. MSI, Media Sports Investments, where Kia Jarabshan, Iranian-born guy, was the head of that group. He's the agent of Mark Hughes.
Shout out to my Persian people out there.
That's right.
But let me tell you this real quick.
Go ahead.
The problem
ahead,
in Monaco.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been to Monaco as well. It's beautiful. It is gorgeous.
Tax-free, by the way.
Tax-free.
He's making £26 a minute tax-free.
I think tax free. It's 20 million a year almost.
It's too many distractions though. You know, you have the casino, you have the Formula One,
the
you
yachts.
Have the beautiful beaches, you have the royal family. It is the luxury playground in the world besides Dubai. People go to Monaco, Monte Carlo, all this stuff, and you put these big time players. You put a club in there. I mean, you live in the life and the dream. Your priority is looking at the beautiful beaches and the casino there and the race cars. And I think it's almost too much distractions. It's hard for clubs. I mean, you look at in France, look at Nice, you know, Juan Lepin, these clubs and these areas that are these prime, you know, the French Riviera places where people want to travel and live and retire. It's almost like intoxicatingly beautiful that you can't focus on the soccer. You're focusing on other stuff. And that's, I think it's tough. And Monaco,
What do you think about a player of Falcao's stature, that, like I said, coveted by Chelsea and Man City, all the great teams. And he left, I think, Atletico Madrid stadium's about 42,000, and Monaco's average was 5,000 people. They say that they'll be able to double that, get 10,000 next season, but they're playing in Stade Louis II Stadium, and it's historically a nice...
It's like a high school stadium on our end.
Yeah, I mean,
in the States.
Historically a big stadium, here's a stadium that wasn't even chosen to be in the European Championships in 2016. It's not one of the eight stadiums that chose. And he's going to go play there after playing in such a beautiful stadium in Spain. I mean, is it all about the money, Brad? Is it all about the money?
You know, I think that at the professional level, and I mean, I've had the privilege to be around professional clubs as well, I think that it depends on the players. But also at the end of the day, when you're talking about this much money, it's a lot about the money, but I think international, it's not as much about the money, obviously, because it's, you know, you don't get paid to be on the national team unless you go and win and qualify and go past certain rounds of the World Cup and different, you know, competitions. But I think that it's getting to that point where certain players, big time players, it is more to them about the money until you've established you are something that is above it all.
Yeah.
You know, it's cultural. It's a lot of things that come into play.
I mean, it'll certainly be interesting to see. I mean, France, we thought it would be a one team league. From now on with PSG, now it looks like Monaco are going to compete, at least for them. Now, quickly, we'll go into more MLS or, you know, American soccer.
Back across the pond.
We're leaving Europe, we're going, but still keeping the European flavor, if you will. Manchester City, the New York Yankees, a partnership for the 20th MLS club starting in 2015. Call me a cynic, guys, but is this just going to be, it's New York City Football Club, is this just a way for Manchester City to have a feeder club and get all these American youngsters and they can bring them over? Call me cynical.
I think that, I mean, ideally, because you're from England, you're thinking of the right way of thinking of things, of, you know, having a feeder club into your club. I think that it's an investment opportunity. New York, that's where people like to be. I think that also the MLS knows that they want to create, you know, local derbies. That's important to build the league.
With the Red Bulls.
Absolutely, yes. And there's been talk even, you know, years ago about trying to do more of that. But I think that Man City can afford it, can afford the investment. Everyone looks at the U.S. as a great, you know, area to land opportunity. The MLS is growing. But in my opinion, though, the most important thing for the MLS to grow is to have relegation. And Thierry Henry said the same thing. David Beckham has said the same thing. I mean, if you're at the sitting at, and Thierry Henry said, if you sit at the bottom of the table, you know, next year and you're a professional player, you're like, okay, well, guess what? I'm still in the top flight next year, whatever. So let's go ahead and, you know, get ready for season.
Is that almost impossible with the NASL not being official with the MLS?
I think that there has to be talks. I mean, I know that we do have, you know, lower levels and they have USL teams and all that good stuff. But I think that U.S. soccer in general has to create a relegation system to help, I guess, the word I'm looking for is motivate clubs and players to buy and train. The MLS clubs, though, they've come so far along. I mean, within the past 5 to 10 years, USU soccer in general has come so much from the United States Development Academy, from Select. I think that's what is growing our players, but I think that the top flight soccer in the U.S. has to have something else to add to it. Like this local derby with Man City coming in investing is a good, it's good. I think that, next step would be to do something like a relegation to get the players to be more, you know, motivated in clubs.
I'm going to go from a business standpoint.
Okay.
I like it. I like it a lot. I mean, the MLS needs a Southeast team, but putting it in our biggest market where all the media talking heads are, where ESPN's 30 minutes away, where NBC Sports is going to be the new premiership, you know, is right there within the Manhattan. I like it a lot. Now, will it be a feeder group? I mean, but we have Real Salt Lake. We have, I'll roll my eyes because you can't see on the radio, on the podcast, Chivas, California, USA.
These things are
already happening. DC United with Man United. You know, it's already happening on a basic level.
Yeah.
Will it happen? Probably not. But I do agree with Brad. We do need some sort of relegation, because what good does it do other than trying to get money, trying to move up? You know, I mean.
Well, you guys moved into the next topic conversation: how to make the MLS grow. Being a European, I look at something like the salary cap as a bad thing.
Yep.
And I think if there was no salary cap, you would have other billionaires, multimillionaires buying these clubs and investing in them. Now, it's not a foolproof system, as we've seen with clubs like Portsmouth in England, where they've overspent beyond their means.
Portsmouth,
which are now in League Two.
Three
years ago, they're in the Premier League. And they won the FA Cup, I think, 6 years ago or 5 years ago. So it's not a foolproof thing, but I think the salary cap is a bad. I think it doesn't really help competitiveness, I suppose. I mean, on the long term, they've discussed it, doing it in England, and it would be horrible. It would never ever work. But let's talk quickly about the top things to make the MLS grow. You guys touched on a few things there, Brad.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You have to understand, right now, you've got a total of 152 international players that come in, slots that we have in the MLS. you know, it's 570 total players. And you see, in the U.S., the thing is that with soccer, obviously it's growing. You have so many different competing sports. But within the MLS itself, like we said earlier, relegation is something I think it needs to grow. But just the marketing standpoint of soccer and the fans is extremely important. But the development of players also. USU Soccer developing the United States Development Academy for the top flight youngsters to go and train and hopefully build a national team. To grow your national team, the theory is if you grow your national team, you grow your domestic league.
Yeah.
Now, within the MLS, getting, you know, these big name players overseas where they want to retire, they come to the U.S., that's all fair and good. But I think that it comes down to so much more in growing the MLS besides talent.
Yeah.
Coaches, coaching education, youth coaches, youth players, within the clubs themselves, you know, doing more outreach stuff, doing more stuff for the communities. I think that local derbies, I think that just a little more of marketing standpoint, not trying to market it like you're the Dallas Cowboys, not trying to market it like you're bigger than a club. Barcelona, you know, Mexican club, like you said, more than a club, they identify with the culture of people that they're around. And
so you're saying starting off, basically build a solid foundation.
You have to build something that you are, something you're not. If we try too hard to be like a European club, or trying too hard not focusing on youth development, I mean, it's going to be a problem for you. So I think the MLS needs to focus more on that and focus more on outreaching within the communities that they're in. There's a long list that I can talk to you about for 20 years about this, but I think that the MLS is on its right track, but they can do things to, you know, increase productivity at the same time.
Hey, Kevin, here's a question that's on my mind. Why do people in America, you come to places like this, the Londoner in Addison, pubs like this, and you see a lot of soccer fans wearing a Manchester United jersey or a Tottenham Hotspur jersey, but you don't see many MLS. Now, how do you get the fans that like soccer here to actually support their local MLS team rather than a European club?
It's the trendy thing right now in the United States, but it goes back to more of in downtown Dallas, you ask anybody, where do you want to go? Which game would you rather go? You want to go to the Rangers game, or do you want to go to FC Dallas? Same distance from downtown Dallas. 30-minute drive. Where do you want to go? People will go Rangers game 80 games out of the year, rather than going to the MLS game for 19 games. I mean, it's still.
But I would say that's just. I would say that's just a Texan thing.
No, it's across the board.
You don't think?
But you have the Dynamo flourishing right now. The Dynamo are just killing it in Houston.
You go up to Seattle Sounders and they sell out 30,000.
And Sporting Kansas City, but no, but
so
it's.
So our question is more about FC Dallas though, then.
Yeah.
Is it with
yeah,
FC
going
Dallas?
Back to Dallas.
Okay. But, yeah, if you were the FC, I'm going to put you on the hot seat now, Kevin. You're in charge of FC Dallas.
I think they're doing well right now. Back when they built the stadium, I know Dallas was in a piss-poor position to pay for a stadium in downtown.
They were at Fair Park, right?
They were at Fair Park, but and then they were in any piss-poor stadium. I mean, but now, I think at the point, and you see it with LA Galaxy too, at the time when they were building new stadiums and soccer-specific stadiums in the early 2000s for MLS, they were building them out in the suburbs because that's where all the new kids
were
coming in.
I think that was the worst idea.
I agree with that too, and there's no way they can do it. But I mean, now you look, people have grown up. You see the Sounders playing at Quest Field. You see the Portland playing in downtown. You see Houston, their stadium's downtown.
I would put it to you that if FC Dallas had a stadium
in downtown.
You guys have to understand also, the thing is that Frisco is is the fastest growing city in the country, and the land value to build a stadium and complex in Frisco was, you know, much more doable. But also, this is another huge point, and, you know, I've had some affiliation, you know, with FC Dallas from the athletic side and administrative side and all that stuff, was that the youth soccer is in Plano. It's in the suburbs. It's in that area. Their fan base, Frisco, is huge in soccer. So when you're putting a club there with these suburbs, so many kids and families are in the area, they think that that location is better for the kids and it's easier for the families to come out to the games. As opposed to a downtown area. The Dallas Cup was held in downtown Dallas this year because they lost it with FC Dallas, and it's now FC Dallas Stadium, not Pizza Park anymore. And no one showed up.
But
just because it's so hard to get there, that's the way they look at it. And
but
all the fans
but
are
that's
the
hard to get no to Frisco, no?
But I mean, either way, no one goes. But the thing is, no one still goes within that population district. No one still goes to the FC Dallas.
Well, in that population district, you have that's majority of your fan base is the youth clubs and players. Like, their youth club has a bajillion teams, and all the kids, right? And they have free tickets. The parents have to buy. A lot of the youth, you know, clubs within the area, they'll go to the FC Dallas games. But I do agree when you say, like, you know, in downtown, obviously, if it was easier for people to drive 15, 20 minutes to a game just from here, I think you'd have maybe possibly a better outcome. But the best example I saw was this Dallas Cup. There was nowhere near as many people as there was last Dallas Cup.
But Dallas Cup is a youth tournament.
Yes, it's a youth international tournament.
I think if you were to go to, like, a youth tournament in England, there wouldn't be that many fans.
No, but Dallas Cup is notorious. I mean, they have over 100,000 people every year throughout that week-long tournament. They have the youth. It's a very, very big youth tournament. It's one of the biggest in the world.
I'll just do this. Right now, I get the soccer families, but those same soccer families will drive from Frisco to Rangers games and still spend the same $200 on that same family, so but they won't go down the road.
You're saying this competition. But I think this competition is the biggest, it's with, whether it's the Rangers or the Cowboys.
It's a sport, but I mean, essentially, what MLS is doing, they're doing smart. They're doing it smartly in the Northwest, at Sporting Kansas City. They're doing it at Columbus Crew. They're doing it smartly, where they're focusing on the trendy hipsters of soccer.
Yeah.
Facebook mentality.
The Facebook mentality, where the people are going to come out, they're going to get drunk, they're going to chant, they're going to have fun. Because in the early 2000s, the MLS started as a family-friendly atmosphere.
Yeah.
And now they're like, okay, we know, we'll take the... And that's why FC Dallas opened the beer garden.
Right.
If you go to the beer garden, tickets are only $20, and you can go drink, you know? So I think they realized, hey, we can't compete with Major League Baseball, minor league baseball, all the family-friendly events that are across the board in any of the major cities. And they're just say, hey, might as well go after the new, we'll throw it out there, the new 50,000 heirs, the 30,000, you know, the new mid-20s to 30s market that, hey, soccer's cool. Like you said, we'll show up, we'll watch the English Premier League. And it's just, it's got to be a fun atmosphere. The past few times I've gone to FC Dallas, it's just been my girlfriend and I with three rows between people and...
Right.
And it's just been her and
they
I
got,
just drink
they
it.
They got some changes they need to make. They have to market. They have to do better on a lot of things. And I think that,
I mean, because one thing I noticed, and I know Seattle Sounders started doing this when they first opened their stadium, was that they knew they weren't going to sell all their seats. So they cut off a huge portion of the stadium so everyone was crammed together. Now, I've been to FC Dallas a few times, and that didn't happen. So you had people spread out everywhere.
Exactly. I mean, your difference between
you
rows,
don't have to even just sit in your seats. You go wherever you feels good.
What would you guys say to quickly end this topic, but what would you guys think that the reason why soccer is not big in this country, I mean, in terms of professional soccer, supporting professional soccer, I mean, it's the most played sport.
It's growing, though.
I agree, it's growing, but what would you say it's because that gap when the old NASL died off or went bankrupt, and then 1996 when MLS started? So you lose from, I think it was 87, from 87 to 96, it was no professional soccer.
It was indoor.
But do you think that had something to do with the diminishing of soccer popularity in this country? Because before then, it was the New York Cosmos and Pele and Beckenbauer and George Best, and then it dipped. Do you think that the generation was lost?
It was new. I mean, you think Pele, you know, that's the god of gods back then, you know, coming here. So people were intrigued and all that stuff. But let me tell you why. There's another reason why. Americans and American sports, let's see, football's popular, right? You score a touchdown, 6 points, kick the extra point, 7 points. Okay?
So you think it's to do with the score?
I think absolutely. The thing is that a lot of people are used to high-scoring games and high-scoring, you know, tactics. And when you watch a soccer game, I mean, I sit with my American friends all the time, and they're like, dude, I watched that game for an hour and a half, 2 hours. They scored one goal or two goals. If you score three, that's a lot. And they're like, it's only 3-1. Are you serious? So I think that growing up playing
it's an American
basketball
mentality.
Yeah, and it's changing a little bit.
It goes back to me with, that's the reason why I love Tottenham. Swashbuckling, attacking football. But I can't sit back and just, I mean, I can't, last year's Champions League final, I couldn't bring any non-soccer fans, because they, like you said, they would have sat there and been like, what the fuck was that?
Yep.
They would have been pissed off. Like, we just wasted an hour and a half, 2 hours of our time to watch a snooze fest.
Okay, here's another, and I said this on the pre-show that me and producer Gio, shout out to him, did, and I said something quite controversial. He asked me why soccer isn't big in this country, and I said at the time, I said, well, this is kind of controversial, because soccer, I believe, in this country, and you guys would know more than me, you guys are American, you're born here or whatever, you know, I think soccer in this country is seen as a foreign sport, and I think naturally Americans are quite insular people. So therefore, they tend to reject anything that's perceived foreign or alien. And that's why soccer, okay. maybe it is growing, but hasn't grown as much. It's because people think, well, that's the sport the Europeans play.
Kevin, you
play.
Go first on that one.
I agree with to a point. It depends on the what your political stance is, because holy shit, when the World Cup commercials were starting and ESPN was doing the remember those World Cup for South Africa where they did those cool famine, yeah. You know, and it doesn't matter, it's one game. I saw a bit on Fox News that said, "Why is ESPN ramming this international sport down our throats? Why don't we let whatever?" And so it depends on your stance. If you're very more open, just moderate. If you're on the other side of the, just more of a moderate, you know, moderate liberal. You're going towards the left of the spectrum. But even moderate Republicans. But as long as you're a moderate person with the same mind, you'll give it a chance. But there's people that just said, "Oh, we're not doing that sport. No, we're not watching it." You know, it's very.
So you think it's tied to you? Almost political.
It's tied to open minds, and that's why such a younger generation has taken it openly so much.
Because we're more liberal as you.
And we're more, and just because that's
open to
new
ideas.
That's the thing. That's why the younger generation has taken it, whereas a lot of our parents.
I mean, they didn't grow up around it, though. You know,
yeah.
They didn't. I mean, you had the
We all grew up in the United States World Cup. Remember, we all watched.
Yeah, and you watched the World Cup, the U.S. national team. I mean, you know what? I remember the 2010 World Cup. I was in the dorms watching with my friends, and I was walking. I'll never forget. I was walking at 7-Eleven. Back to one of the dorms and to watch, and I was wearing a U.S. jersey, and guy honks his car. He's like, "Go USA," and I was like, "Yeah, that's what it's about." You see, it's soccer enthusiastic during the World Cup. Everyone's USA, USA, even Women's World Cup. I mean, USA dominates the women's league in the world for soccer, and everyone is passionate about it during that time because it's what's hot at that time. It's what's cool at that time. It's what's trendy at that time. But then you have all these other sports here. It kind of, you know, clouds it. But I think to some extent, yeah, I mean, I've played college football. And they look at me whenever I juggle a football, when I juggle a football like a soccer ball and stuff like that, they're like, you know, "What are you doing, da da da?" And it's, you know, kind of like a foreign thing to them, I guess. But at the same time, I don't think it's completely like, you know, "Oh, well, that's a foreign game. We don't like it." I think because we have so many other sports right now that there's so much passion and the U.S. is good at, from football to basketball to hockey to baseball to whatever. Soccer, you know, we're not the top dogs at it, you know, per se, but when we're in the World Cup and then we're doing well, then the passion goes there. I think U.S. is so competitive that they want to support what we're the best at all times.
USA loves winners, but we need one Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan. Okay. One charismatic, like exactly. Landon Donovan, everyone loves Landon Donovan, but we just need one guy who goes in front of the cameras, just eats it up, just loves the
Bryant
attention. Yeah,
soccer.
Kobe Bryant
everyone
or something
it.
Just loves the attention, eats it, and then all of us will just be loving it.
Well, quickly, earlier we talked about Manchester City and the New York team starting in 2015. Now, the rumor is they want one star player. They don't want a David Beckham coming the end of their career. They want what you just said, you both said, a Michael Jordan, someone that scores, that star. And the rumor is it's going to be Wayne Rooney. We'll
I was
going to
say FC Dallas, so yeah, Wayne Rooney, bring him here, but no,
We'll see Wayne Rooney join New York City.
Well, the other thing with soccer, it's, for instance, you have Brazil where it's only soccer and maybe bull riding, you know, and then you have Spain where it's bull fighting and soccer. So U.S. is the land of all sports,
exactly.
And we're the best at it. In women's soccer, you don't have women's soccer in Mexico or Brazil that I know of. You know, you have that. In Mexico, it's just soccer. That's it. Here you have baseball, basketball, football. You have it all. This is the country where you have all sports, and we got to be good at all of them. So
right.
if you're not top dog at it, then it hurts.
Yep.
And that's part of the big thing, because in any other country, the culture is only soccer, or soccer as a very predominant thing. Or the other sport has bull riding or bull fighting, has nothing to do with a ball at all. So I think that affects it a lot too.
I also just wanted to make a note. Jake laughed when Gio said America was the best, and then I just want to make a point. Who has the most Olympic medals from the past Olympics?
He said best at every sport.
And we had the most Olympic medals, just throwing it out there.
you know we're on the ball when the producer has to get out of his seat and talk about the issues. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, certainly from, if people couldn't tell, I'm from Great Britain. I'm from London, England. We do have rugby league and rugby union, if people know the difference.
And USA tied England 1-1 in the last World Cup last time they played.
We tied, well.
Thank you, Joe Hart.
And it was actually Robert Green.
Yeah, it was Robert Green. Robert Green.
Yeah,
where is he at now? Portsmouth?
Robert Green's at West Ham.
Oh, okay, good for him.
I was at that World Cup in South Africa. I was at a bar and it was an awful, awful night. It was night for us. I guess it was afternoon for you guys.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think most of the countries that are soccer mad, it's because it's just soccer. But it's here. In terms of America being the best at every sport, well, you guys play sport in this country that only you guys play. So, I mean...
we never lost the Super Bowl. Just throwing it out there.
The World Series is just American teams, last time I checked. Okay. Yeah, so I talked about Wayne Rooney, maybe New York City Football Club. That's a spoiler alert. In 2 years' time, we'll see if that happens. Don't know whether we can cut this part out if we didn't. David Beckham, MLS club, has a right in his contract. He retired. God save David Beckham. I'm a huge supporter of David Beckham. Wish he was a fan of me. Probably isn't. He has a right to own an MLS club. Now, the rumor is it will be in Florida, in Miami, Orlando. That's where they want to grow the market. And it's interesting because when the New York Cosmos wanted to come back with Eric Cantona at the helm of it, and Pelé was the honorary president, David Beckham had the thing in his contract that said it couldn't be in New York, so he couldn't join. What happens to the Cosmos? We'll talk about that, I'm sure, on a different podcast. But what happened to them now that the New York City
gonna move to Florida?
Maybe to Florida, but New York Cosmos are joining, I believe, one of the second or third tier in American
USL.
Soccer. Yeah, USL, that's where we're going to start. So like, it's almost like a development league, right? Brad, you'd know more than me than
PDL
that?
PDL is a development league. That's called the Premier, or they even call it Professional Development League, where college players can play in the summer with pro players or players that are older. So that's only a summer league. Then you go after that, you got USL 1, okay. USL 2, and that's then right. They have another division, professional this and that. So, yeah, it is, but it is a lower level.
No. That's, I think their philosophy is we'll start here because it costs $100 million right now to buy into the MLS. David Beckham, owning the team. Will America embrace him the second time around?
I think, well, like I said, I alluded to it earlier when we were talking about the NYCFC, the New York team. The Southeast United States is just, if you look at all the MLS teams, it's literally an L of America. It's just literally... And there's just, I mean, we need a team in the Southeast. There's no other team in the Southeast.
But they had a Miami team once upon a time. Miami Fusion, I think they were cool.
The only one thing about the Southeast is the MLS schedule.
Oh, okay.
It's bad in Dallas.
By the way,
if Florida in July.
You make a great point. That was a point alluded to our last question. I think MLS needs to be on the European schedule. None of this, we're playing in the league, but... As we'll go into the next topic, but the U.S. national team are playing tomorrow.
It stinks here is summer in July.
No, summer in July is tough, especially in Dallas.
And then imagine in Florida where you can taste the humidity.
Well, let me say this real quick also, and he's absolutely right. The weather here is tough to play, but here's another thing. Florida, right? Okay, let's look at it this way. David Beckham gets a club. I don't think it's David Beckham that makes that club great. I think if it's in Miami, you have the Latin culture, you have the Cuban, you have the Hispanics. They're yearning for not a USL team, but a professional team. You have the pretty face of David Beckham, every Latino mom and girl, all this.
The heartthrob.
The Miami cleaned up, you know, and the Posh Spice, you know, always has been cleaned up.
They will show up to the games and, you know,
David Beckham. Gio, does your mom have a picture of David Beckham on the wall?
Fuck no.
No.
She has one of Clint Dempsey, though. That's cool.
Clint Dempsey. No, but David Beckham being look, he will be the face or the president or the owner, but he will not be running the club.
Yeah,
he's
absolutely
a player. He's not, you know, he won't be running the club. It won't be Beckham that makes it successful. It will be the culture and the community that surround it, especially, and I think Miami would be a perfect place to put another MLS team.
That's what they want. And quickly, our last topic. U.S. internationals. Mm-hmm. Now, in upcoming podcasts, we're going to talk about the Gold Cup. Of course, Confederations Cup. But friendlies are going on right now. USA, I believe they're, fourth out of the eight teams in the World Cup qualifying, and they've only got four, I think, one draw, a win, and a loss. So they're not doing too well.
We popped up now in a second.
You got to understand, though, that a lot of teams, you know, with This is a very weird World Cup qualifying.
But you should coast, no?
That's what we think. They should coast, but here's the thing. Yeah, people have to understand this. National team soccer and international soccer is much different than club. Because you have players who are coming in from their professional clubs to come in and train for a week, 2 weeks, da-da-da-da, until their games. And it's much different for the coaching staff. It's much different for the players. You know, you're not playing with them every single day. But, you know, getting rid of Bob Bradley going to go coach Egypt, getting Jurgen Klinsmann, who's, you know...
What do you think of Jurgen Klinsmann as a coach?
I think that...
Heavily criticized in Europe. He's not considered that great.
Because they don't like him, because he was living in California and all this stuff, and he's being an American boy and all this stuff. But let me tell you something. He has the experience. He has the right idea. He has the right concept. I think people, like I said, we always want to support a winner. We always want to support a winner. If they don't get the immediate results, they're not happy with it. I think that what he's done with the USDA, what he's doing with U.S. soccer, what he's doing to change the curriculum, he's trying to get it more modernized into a European style, and the play tactics have changed.
Well, he's drafting it up. Well, the word on the street is that he's drafting a lot of German-born Americans.
Go and ahead. That's, why not? That,
why not? I mean, he gets heavily criticized, Kevin, doesn't he?
I'm going to go back to his spot, then I'll jump into that one. I love Kingsman because he's building that...
You love him because he played for your team. Isn't that right, Kevin? You're biased.
But that's not the point. Irregardless. No, but he's building... Like what Brad said, he's building an awesome youth system. Now, his tactical coach, Vasquez, fucking hate him. He's an idiot. And there's times when the USA will play... I don't know. Klinsmann's going to be good for us. If he can... You saw Klinsmann in Germany. Klinsmann revamped the whole system.
Okay.
But you had Jurgen Low.
No.
We need someone else behind him.
Okay, Kevin. This is where a podcast comes into a debate. He didn't change the way Germany played. Who was their assistant coach? Was Joachim Low?
No, the other way. Yeah, that's what I said. Joachim Low. He needs to do a technical coach. Klinsmann is going to be the pretty face. He's going to be fine. He's going to build the system. But with Vasquez as his tactical coach... USA is just gonna keep.
If you've noticed, though, with Vasquez,
what's the use of a pretty face, Kevin?
David Beckham.
It's
what's
called.
The use of
I know.
Oh,
he was actually a fantastic player.
David Beckham kicked the ball 45-50 yards. That's it.
He was a fantastic player, but for Galaxy,
they won the two MLS Cups in a row last time I checked.
With Landon Donovan.
And
Hercules Gomez and a pretty good stat defense.
But you know, good what you're saying. As far as, but you have to look at the style of teams and the style of the way plays. The Germans, the way they play compared to the US right now, it's very different. It's the formations that go out are very different. The players and the quality is very different. You have to be able to do what you cannot force a system on your players. You have to build your system around your players. So I think that right now, because if you look at the national team squad, the pool has gotten so much bigger. Younger players are coming in. They're trying to find more of an identity. You know, they've fluctuated skinny between a 4-4-2, a 4-3-3, a 4-5-1. You know, we can't have a Josie Altidore lone striker. We can't do stuff like that. We can't have Dempsey. There's a lot of guys that you can't have as a lone striker. And I think right now, he doesn't seem like he's panicked. He seems like he knows what's going on. It's time for U.S. soccer in general to really step up to the occasion.
Is he
going to
win tomorrow? I mean, it's a German team without any Bayern Munich players Dortmund players.
I think that it'll either be a tie, 1-1, or U.S. win 2-1.
2-1?
I'm more narcissistic. I'll do it's 1-0 Germany.
1-0 Germany? You're pessimistic, Kevin.
Klinsmann's
not going to do it for the U.S.
No. Well, no? Our biggest game is... Okay. I'll jump off the boat if he doesn't win June 11th in Seattle against Panama.
Panama top of the qualification group.
Seattle. If he doesn't win in Seattle, which is going to be the biggest USA pro USA crowd ever.
Keep that on record, Gio, because... Yeah.
Well, it's going to be recorded...
I'll jump off with him.
Because, I mean, if he doesn't win, I don't care if it's ugly, 1-0, whatever...
We need points.
He said he wants USA support, so USA soccer scheduled a game in Seattle.
Well, I'm glad we're not talking about England, because if it was up to me, England aren't going to qualify for the World Cup, but that's a different issue, whatever.
Yeah, your group's all right.
England are horrible. Let's not talk about it. And they play Brazil, tomorrow, Sunday, and they will probably lose.
Is Neymar playing?
I believe so. Yes.
Oh, yay!
Because they're getting ready for the Confederations Cup.
There's an article I read about Neymar, since I guess we're in the different comments. There's an article I read about Neymar. He said England is shit. Like, essentially, that's what he said. They're not great players. Yeah. But essentially, he did it in the classy way of saying England is shit.
He might not make it to Barcelona.
Yeah. I know. Might strangle him on the field if they're coming like that. Terrible. Okay, I want to thank you guys. Brad, thank you for being on the pod. Kevin, thank you for the
Thank you, Jake. Thank you, Jake and Gio. It's good fun.
We'll see you guys. Producer Gio. Let's say thank you, guys. See you next week.
Ball back.